Have you ever applied a skincare product to your body and wondered what kind of crazy chemicals are in it, and then read the ingredient list and realized you can't even pronounce half the ingredients? Your skin is the largest organ of your body, and what you put on it becomes part of you. In fact, if your skincare has chemicals you wouldn't eat, you probably ought not rub it all over your body. This is why in our house we use Tallow Skin Solutions Body Butter. It is made with all natural ingredients that are safe enough to eat and offer your skin the nutrients it can thrive on. The tallow is sourced from a family farm in Georgia, which practices sustainable regenerative agriculture. The body butter also has organic coconut oil, organic cocoa butter, and organic essential oils. The texture is silky and luxurious as it is whipped to the perfect consistency. Enjoy one of the five different scents. My personal favorite is creamsicle, which blends vanilla and orange and smells delicious. If you've never used a natural product like this, you are in for a treat. Go to tallowskinsolutions.com and enter code MINDFUL for 20% off. That's tallowskinsolutions.com and use code MINDFUL for 20% off your next order.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This episode is a little different. This is a short compilation of some of the mindful tip videos that I did a few years back. I plan on putting these out here and there and trying to compile them where there's a mix of different topics. This one pulls from a mindful tip about gratitude. This came from a really challenging time in my life, especially in regards to my relationship with my wife. And there were some very powerful lessons that I gained from applying the strategies around gratitude that I had learned into my life. The second clip is from a mindful tip I did about loving kindness and how to use the principles of loving kindness to improve not just your mood, but your overall sense of well-being. And finally, the third clip provides a simple breath practice. It's a structured breath practice, which I find is very useful for some folks, especially those that have trouble maintaining focus during a breath practice. It allows you to focus on a very simple task that involves counting. I find it to be a very transformative style of breathing. And what I mean by that is from the time you start the practice to the time you finish, whether you do it for a few minutes or tens of minutes, you're likely to experience a significant transformation in your current state of mind. Your nervous system is likely to experience a significant shift. And if you're willing to commit the time to the practice, I would suspect you will find it has a 100% chance of being effective. I hope you test it out and let me know what you think. And if you enjoy this style of content, a little medley of tips, then let me know and I will consider that going forward when I'm trying to figure out what to publish on this podcast. Thanks again for listening. I'm always grateful. Enjoy these tips and have a great day. Today's tip is really like a case study, an application. So I want to do some videos where I show you examples of real life scenarios of how, where you could be in a place in life that is very challenging. You might be adding a lot of suffering, and then using mindfulness practices to really reshape it and find a gift and find the lesson. So I find that the best lessons that we have, the greatest opportunities, always come from like the most difficult times. You know, from the wound comes the gift. So this is just gonna be an example. And to do this, I'm gonna get really personal. This will be probably the most personal I've gotten
online. So this is me practicing vulnerability. So bear with me. This is not an easy thing for me to share. Never shared anything like this. But I hope it reaches you, and I hope it could help and resonates. So when I quit drinking, I used to be a regular drinker. So I didn't drink like a lot, but I drank very often, basically daily, for about 23 years. And a few years back when I stopped drinking, it was very interesting. Like, a lot of things came up, and it was a big turning point in my journey of growth, personal development. And there was a lot to digest as old suppressed stuff came up. And what I recognized, one, is that sometimes you just don't know why you have a habit until you stop. And then you can really self-reflect and say, oh, wow, I used to do this because of this. You know, I was soothing this. Or you can't really see yourself sometimes when you're in it. So when I stopped drinking, a lot of things became very apparent to me about my behavior and why I was drinking and what was I holding back and so forth. And it was also, you know, that process affected everybody else in my life and in a lot of ways positively. When I stopped drinking, I became more present with my children, for instance. I became a better listener, more aware of, you know, the words I was saying and how they might sound. So there was a lot of growth that came out of not drinking. Overall, it was a very beneficial thing for me. But it was interesting. A lot of stuff arose that was very challenging for my relationship. So, you know, my wife, the mother of my children, my lover, my best friend, Sarah, you know, that was not an easy process for her. She was learning new things about me that she didn't know, even though we had been together for a long time. So, she had her own suffering through that and had to navigate that herself, which I'm sure is very challenging. And if anyone knows anybody, if you have anybody with, you know, addiction in your life, like, you know, it's not just hard for the addict. Everyone that they relate to will be affected. And so that was very interesting, like going through that process where my old stuff comes up. And then as I share it, it affects the other people. And Sarah was definitely affected by some of the things that arose. And I remember at a time where there was someone in her life that she was really kind of leaning on to vent and to relate to and to have, you know, a friendship and someone to listen to. And it was somebody that I knew also and had, you know, weekly interaction with, and somebody that I cared about and valued and respected. And I remember when it became aware to me that she was really building relationship with this person to kind of help her through this process. Well, this person was younger than me, stronger than me, had hair, and, you know, the ego just takes over. Jealousy, all the pain and suffering that I could create over that, of my wife, my lover, seeking help elsewhere. And I couldn't be the rock for her in that scenario because of the nature of the scenario and the nature of the subject matter. And I remember, you know, initially finding just so much pain and suffering in that, and like jealousy of seeing my wife really kind of get closer to another man. And it wasn't like sexual, but it was flirtatious because humans can be flirtatious. It feels good to be flirtatious. And there's a lot of healthy things that come with flirting, you know? So there was a flirtatious component of that friendship. So where I felt right at a time where I wouldn't say that, you know, our relationship was on the rocks, but we were going through turbulence and a growth cycle. She was building a relationship with someone that was a man that was young and vibrant. And man, that was hard to see and hard to feel. And then when I really meditated on it and thought about and revisited my values and what was important to me and how much I cared and loved Sarah, and you know, I started to come back to the basics. I came back to, you know, gratitude, always coming back to, you know, being grateful. And it dawned on me, like, how grateful I was that she had this person in her life at a time when she needed it. And in a moment, everything changed. Like, all the pain and suffering and all the jealousy, in a moment, by changing the way I thought about it and shedding the light of gratitude on the experience, changed everything. And I had the utmost love for this man and thankfulness and gratitude. And it was overwhelming to the point where I felt like I had to tell him. And that week, I did. I got him in a quiet room together, and I don't know if he thought I wanted to take a swing at him or what at first, but I said to him, hey, you know, I know Sarah's been talking to you about, you know, what's been going through in our relationship, and, you know, we've been going through some tough stuff. And I told him, I want you to know how thankful I am that she has you in her life and how grateful I am that you're there for her at this time of need. And it felt so good. He was probably shocked at first, and he's a pretty cerebral fellow, pretty woke. So I'm thinking by now he realized that I was doing that for me, because it was so freeing. And it's amazing because I think, you know, the bigger, the more challenging, the harder the pain is, the harder the suffering, the bigger the problem, issue is in our life, the greater the opportunity there is for growth and learning. And, you know, from that point, Sarah and I's relationship has never been stronger. Like, that was definitely one of the many turning points where our relationship became stronger. And, you know, it's stronger now than it ever has been. And it's amazing to me that how fast it could happen. You know, that it's, which is just really a reflection that it's just a choice. Like, the way we look at things, the way we shape things is a choice, and it has a dramatic impact on our lives and the quality of our life. I mean, in a moment, I went from pain and suffering to sheer joy and gratitude and love over the same experience. It was just, which way do I want to look at this experience? And I took something that initially bubbled up as something just so negative and created something so positive. And I still to this day am, like, so grateful for that person, for being there, for being a friend to my best friend when I couldn't be. And, you know, this is just an example of when we pause in life, when we pause and reflect and come back to what are our values and what do we want to drive our decisions by? What's the guiding light? What are the values? What are the qualities that we want to make our decisions and kind of how do we want to look at the things? How do we want to know ourselves in this world? And then how do we practice that? How do we behave in that way? Thanks for joining me today for another Mindful Tip. Today's talk is about loving kindness. Love is kind of a big deal, and so is kindness. We're going to take a couple different takes on how to, like, approach loving kindness as a practice or as an intention. So, a couple examples here. From a personal practice, you know, I think we've referenced this before. On some level, everything we do is going to be a reflection of how we care about ourselves, what our worth is. So how we treat other people or how we treat our environment, you know, how we feel about ourselves will be reflected in those behaviors. And it's very easy to either lose sight of how we care about ourselves and not pay attention, or to just not feel very good about ourselves. You know, we could be carrying, you name it, shame, guilt, whatever, just regret, and develop like a cumulative feeling of, I don't feel good about myself. I don't like myself. I'm not good enough. I don't love myself. So having like a practice of, you know, connecting with ideas of loving yourself can be really useful. And it's a practice. It's not like, oh, I decided today to love myself and that's the way it is from now on. Maybe some people could do that. I don't know any of those people. I know for me, it's a practice. So some ways to do that. You may have heard of like a metta prayer, a loving kindness prayer. So as a daily practice or a regular practice, this is usually, I've heard this different ways. So I'll give you a couple examples. I use two little kind of loving kindness self practices for myself when I could remember or when I'm feeling, you know, kind of down in the dumps or whatever. If I could see that I'm feeling down and I have the awareness to recognize that, hey, this is not your A game today. You know, you're feeling a little down. Let's do something to nourish. Let's self-nourish. I'll give you like a short abridged version and a slightly longer version that I use. So one is, I think this is the first way I really learned it. And I'll substitute either the words may I or I am. And there's no rules here. So you could try whichever one and, you know, whichever one, you know, works for you, then use that one. So it goes like this. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. And it's just practicing saying that. So this could be for a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I don't care. Like, play around with it. Or I'll use the words I am. I am happy. I am safe. I am happy. I am healthy. I live with ease. The longer one I use sometimes is more of, I don't know, has like an angle of healing for me, which I just practice healing. I dig the idea of healing, and I have practices in my life that, you know, just nourish that concept of ongoing healing. I think we're all in constant healing from something, whether it be physical or mental or emotional, or we're just healing from like the day's stress or the yesterday's stress. So with that, I use a few more words, nothing real advanced here. I am safe and secure. I am happy and healthy. I am calm and confident in my abilities to heal. Or I am calm and confident in my ability to heal my body from dot, 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 fill in the blank. And you repeat it for a few minutes. And you'll feel better. Guarantee. If you practice this and it doesn't work, you let us know. We'll help you. But my guess, if you practice, you'll notice something good happen from within. You'll have create from within. Remember, we are our own healer. We just have to practice. So that's one take. The idea of using loving kindness as a self-practice to better ourselves. From a general well-being perspective, when I say better. If you practice that for 5 minutes, you will feel generally better than before the 5 minutes started. I promise you. The second take on this would be more as a tool to change your mood. I think we've all probably experienced at some point in our life that when we give something to somebody, feels good. It could be a person, it could be a pet. If you give your pet, you give your dog a bone, it feels good, the act of giving. So if you think of somebody in your life, or maybe even a stranger that you know might be suffering, or like a group of people. It could be another country, or, you know, somebody you want to connect with, or somebody that you've suffered with. Maybe there's someone that you have a peppered past with, like a history of a toxic relationship, a family member, or whatever. And ultimately, you want what's best. You want to go from A to B, and you don't know how to go there, but you know that you're suffering in the knowing that, you know, that it's not healthy, that there's not good communication. Or if you just know someone else is sick and not feeling well and you want to give something to them, or they're struggling, they're suffering in their own way, and or the world is, and you want to make an offering, then you could use this prayer as a tool to help them. One, to maybe change the collective energy of the universe by adding these positive thoughts to it. And, you know, some people would say that you could actually affect that person by sending them prayers. Many people would think that that's true. Some people don't. That's okay. But the practice offer for also for yourself in the act of giving can have a powerful impact for you, just as when we give somebody a gift. So you could think of somebody in your life, maybe, that you want to connect better with, maybe, and you could, or somebody that you know is suffering, and you offer that same prayer. May so-and-so be safe. May they be happy. May they be healthy. May they live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. So with that practice, we improve our internal environment. Your brain will feel different by offering that gift, and you may impact theirs. Okay, the third take would be more of using loving kindness as like an intention, like a way of living, where maybe you're navigating a scenario, an experience in life, and checking in to say, okay, I know I live with intention of being loving and kind. So how can I respond in this experience with that in mind? So maybe there's a stressful experience, and we could catch ourselves before we react maybe unskillfully to it and say, whoa, let me pause here. What's my intention here? Maybe it's a conflict at work with someone, and the instinct is to yep, whatever. Well, they did this, and so-and-so did this, and you did wrong, and I'm right. But maybe we could pause and say, well, ultimately, I know that I want to know myself as someone who lives with an intention of being loving and kind. So how can I know myself in a way in this experience where I could be that? How could I respond in this experience with this approach of being loving and being kind? And that could have a total change, a huge impact on how you handle that experience. And that can be powerful too. I think I read something similar. Let me try to pick this book correctly. I think it was the book Emotional Chaos to Clarity, written by Philip Moffitt. Outstanding book. And I think he references like the difference of a goal and intention. And this would be really useful in this scenario. For instance, if our goal is to be like loving and kind, well, we're all going to fail at that sometimes. And what we don't want to do is identify ourselves with, you know, whatever that outcome is. So like if we did something that in the moment that wasn't very loving or wasn't very kind, we don't want to be like, oh, I'm not loving and kind. I ruined it. I'm not good. I screwed up. As opposed to just having an intention of in this moment, on this day, I have this intention of living this way. And yeah, you're going to not express yourself perfectly in that way in every moment. But if we just go at life with this intention of living this way, we could lose some of the conflict of having it as this like goal, that this destination that I got to get. And if I don't do it, then I've messed up and now I'm wrong and I'm not good enough. And there's kind of a fine line there. Maybe I hope you could see that. But this is a great topic to like connect with that idea of, yeah, I want to be known. I want to know myself in the world as someone who is loving and kind. I want to be known as that. So I intend on living my life that way. So as I go through my day, I could connect with that idea of, oh, there's a decision coming up. Let me check in and remember that I want to know myself as a loving and kind person. So how do I make this decision based on that value, that intention? So there's like three ways that you could use loving kindness to just integrate it into your life, into your being. I'm here with the Mindful Movement. Thanks for joining me today for another mindful tip. Today's tip is on breathing or breath practice. So I work in a gym most of the time, and the first thing we do in every session is kind of connect with breath. And we'll have some type of practice. And we might use maybe 20 or 30 different type of practices. And in general, because most of our lives are a little sympathetic driven, where we could always use more relaxation than stimulation. In general, there are exceptions to that. We'll tend to focus on breath work where the exhales are longer than the inhales. And that facilitates relaxation. So there's a lot of ways to do that. And some people find it challenging. And sometimes in the act of observing the breath, people find it challenging not to kind of take control and hold it and manipulate it. And we want to be able to watch it and still be able to relax at the same time. So one of the patterns that we use to make this a little easier is by using a little bit of a structure. And we'll use it's a ratio. It's a 2-to-1-to-4 ratio. What that means is the inhale is some multiple of 2, and then you hold your breath for half that duration, and then you exhale for twice that duration. For example, most people will begin by inhaling for a count of 4, and it could be a count of 4, whatever a count means to you. It could be 4 heartbeats, it could be 4 seconds. But in for 4, hold for 2, and then out for 8. And sometimes it takes a few breath cycles just to get used to that. And what happens is as you relax, you could add to that, and you add in multiples of 2-to-1-to-4. For instance, if you find it very easy to get to a count of 8 on your exhale, then try inhaling for 6, holding for 3, and exhaling for 12, and then 8, 4, 16, and so forth. And it kind of takes the mind off trying to relax and focusing on more of a simpler task for some people, which is just following the count, and the relaxation just happens. And the longer you spend at it, you'll realize the longer you can get. I've had sessions where I could easily get to an inhale of 20, 10, and an exhale of 40. Now, I say that's easy. It's not necessarily easy. That's maybe 20 minutes into a practice. But it does happen. And the more you practice, the easier that will come. But it's just a simple way where you could have a task or the conscious mind is on something very simple, and it allows the internal environment to really change and become relaxed through practicing without trying to relax. So it's a very powerful practice. I find that a lot of people that are not used to really setting aside time for breath practice that might feel challenged at the idea of relaxing as a beginner find it as a really useful tool where I could just follow this math. Let the math be what it is and let it grow very organically. And then after a few minutes, you just realize you're in a different state. Your nervous system has created some type of shift. And I think you'll know what I'm talking about when you practice. I would love to hear what you guys think about it. So if you do practice, let us know, give us your feedback, and you know, let the community know what it's done for you, or if there's any variation. If the numbers are just not feeling right for you, then you know, you could tweak those numbers a little bit to whatever feels right. But in my experience, it's a very effective practice for pretty much anybody. The first few tries, it might be challenging, but usually everybody kind of gets in a groove and gets it. But it gives you some structure, but it still delivers the benefits we're looking for. And over time, it'll teach you that you can relax and you can use the breath as that tool. And this is just a simple way to practice. I hope you enjoy this. As always, have a tremendous day.